May it please the court, my name is John Ledsack, and I represent Prestige Maintenance Company. This case presents an issue of speculative damages. This is a contract dispute between two corporations. It involves a situation of a case within a case. So the contract itself is not really the issue on appeal. The contract damages are an issue on appeal. And what we're looking at is the case within a case is a workers' compensation case that Target is having to defend because one of its employees was injured. And under the contract that Target had with Prestige Maintenance, because we do the maintenance in the stores, we're obligated to reimburse Target if certain criteria are met under the contract. And we're not disputing in this appeal whether those criteria are met. What we're disputing is whether the court had a sufficient basis for all of the award that it made. It awarded $706,000 based on what Target was going to pay or had paid in the workers' compensation case. And what we're challenging on appeal is the portion of that that represented future payments, payments that had not actually been made, only the future payments of which there's evidence only of estimates. And we believe that those estimates fall into the category of speculative damages and are not supported to the level that's required to base an award.
Counsel, do you agree that in reviewing your claim that we apply Minnesota law?
Your Honor, I don't believe that Minnesota law applies to the procedure, but I also believe that it doesn't make any difference. So if you look at what Minnesota law is compared to Colorado law on what kind of evidence is required to prove medical expenses, I think Minnesota is stricter than Colorado. We addressed this in the brief, but Colorado doesn't require expert testimony to prove the amount of future medical expenses. It's my reading of Minnesota cases that Minnesota does require that. So if you apply those Minnesota cases here, there was no medical testimony as to what the future medical expenses are going to be.
Excuse me for interrupting. I just want to make sure I understand what you said. You believe that Minnesota law requires medical expert testimony to support the claims for future damages?
That's how I read the cases. I mean, they just say expert testimony. They don't get into, you know, more details about that. But I think it requires some expertise about what the medical expenses themselves will be. So in this case, let's just focus on this case for a second, which is that there was somebody who's an expert in insurance claims who can look at numbers and then and do some arithmetic. That's not what I believe the Minnesota cases are talking about when they talk about expert testimony. I think what they're talking about and what Colorado cases have talked about is, do you need somebody with medical expertise to come in and say, first of all, what kind of treatment is needed? I believe that X surgery is So that's one thing about the necessity, what kind of treatment is involved. There's another aspect of that, which is, what is it going to cost for that specific treatment? So I don't believe that an insurance adjuster, at least based on the record in this case, has the knowledge of what the medical cost market is to be able to give any testimony about, well, I think that the charges for this kind of treatment will be such and such. So as I read the Minnesota cases, when they talk about the need for expert testimony, they're talking about the need for some kind of medical-based expert testimony on this is the kind of treatment that will be needed, and this is what doctors and hospitals charge for that treatment. Give me a second, Ron. They're in our reply brief at pages 3 and 4. Kwapian versus Starr, Lind versus Slowinski, and the full citations are on page 4 of our reply brief. Okay, thank you. So, Judge Hawthorne, let me get back to your question, which is, you know, does it, what is the effect of Minnesota law? This is not an issue where the contract said anything about how do you calculate the damages that are due under the contract. It's silent about that. So I think that Colorado procedural law applies. But even if the court decides that in, you know, in interpreting what that clause in the contract means, that the enforcement of this contract shall be under Minnesota law, if you apply the Minnesota case law to prove future medical damages, you need expert testimony. Colorado law is similar, but not quite as strong as that. Colorado law requires proof of the reasonableness and necessity. We have cases. Go ahead.
Excuse me. Back up just a minute. Would you agree that determining the standard of review is a procedural matter, and therefore our standard of review for the future awards, our future damages awards, or award, would be that as determined under Colorado law?
Yes, I agree with that.
And under Colorado law, that standard of review would be that we would not disturb that award unless it is completely unsupported by the record.
I agree that what you've just said is a snapshot of what the law is. What the question in this case is whether the completely unsupported, you have to look at the details of this case. And I think if you look at the details of what the insurance adjuster testified about, his numbers are completely unsupported. And let me get right to the specifics of why I think that's the case. What the adjuster did is not base his numbers on what any medical testimony was, what any medical records were. What he based his numbers on was his own methodology. Now, it's an easy and simple methodology, but it's just not supported by what the real medical evidence in the case was. So in this case, the injured worker, Mrs. Cleveland, in the 4 years before the surgery, before the trial, she'd had two surgeries. And we know exactly what the workers' compensation, what Target had to pay for those surgeries. It was $105,000. Now, what the doctors testified about, what Dr. Ashberger, who was the only medical witness at trial, and what the medical records talk about, is that she's going to need two more surgeries. So one was a shoulder surgery, one was another knee surgery. Now, that's what the future medical treatment, that there was proof of, that there was any evidence of. Now, there's no evidence to say that for the rest of her life, she's going to need a certain kind of treatment. The only specifics that the medical testimony was that these two surgeries. Now, Mrs. Cleveland was not at the trial because she was having the shoulder surgery, but the judge said, I don't need to address whether that actually happened. She's going to need it. He made a finding that she's going to need that shoulder surgery. We don't challenge that. He also made a finding she's going to need another knee surgery. We don't challenge that. But what we do challenge is that instead of making the claim of what the future medical expenses are, it's not related on what the doctors actually said is going to happen. It's a totally different method. And what the insurance adjuster did is look back at the 4 years between the accident and trial and say, this is what has happened over the 4 years. And I'm just going to project that same rate for the rest of Mrs. Cleveland's life expectancy. So she had a life expectancy of 14 years. He took the 4 years before, multiplied it out, and that's where the numbers came from. Your Honor, let me review the brief a second. I think the distinction is, and I admit that I don't have the details of that case ready to give you, the testimony is that if you can make the assumption that something is going to happen on a regular basis into the future, such as This is a condition that's going to require an annual checkup. This is going to require medication, and you have to check every year to make sure the medication is working. Or this is a treatment where you need to have an MRI every 5 years. Then you can do the actuarial table and project it out. But what I submit is that if you have a case where the specific evidence of what treatment is going to be needed is two specific things, then the proper way to determine future benefits or future damages is to give testimony on those specific things, which is not what happened here. So the claim adjuster, for all estimates of what the future was going to be, assumed that everything that has happened in the past 4 years, which admittedly was a horrendous history of medical complications and treatment that just did not work out. Mrs. Cleveland had two surgeries that were not successful, but there's nothing in any of the medical testimony that said that's the way it's going to be for the rest of her life. So if you look at the traditional way that trial courts in this state every week determine exactly this issue, and it's done on the basis of medical testimony. Here's the treatment that we foresee, and this is what it's going to cost. It's not where, okay, here's the treatment that we foresee, but then we're going to estimate it based on something completely other than that. So because the medical expenses were based on an estimate of something that is not grounded in reality, there was no medical records or testimony that the next 14 years are going to be just exactly the same as the last 4 years. That part was unsupported. With regard to permanent total disability, switching gears now to the other award that's roughly $200,000, the adjuster assumed that that's going to happen. But what he said, and if you look at his exhibit where he made these notes, we attached that to the opening brief at the very end. You know, on page one, he says the numbers for permanent total, are going to be $200,000. But in that same document, at the very end, last page, he says the value of the permanent total claim is $106,000. So if you look at his testimony, which is at record page 1241, this kind of captures it in a nutshell. Let me make sure that number is right. Yes, record page 1241. He said that his numbers are the life potential. And he's not talking about what is really going to happen. He's talking about what the potential is. So he's saying in that document, Exhibit 13, that if she gets the award, this is what it's going to be. But in the same document, he says, that's not necessarily what I think is going to happen. So we think that the trial court never addressed the criteria for a permanent total award, but just accepted those numbers without question, and did not meet the test of requiring proof that is actually going to happen. There's no finding about the criteria for permanent total disability. There was no testimony about that, but the court accepted it. So we asked the court to set aside those awards of future benefits, and I'd like to reserve my time.
Thank you.
Morning, Your Honors. John Chase, attorney registration 30820. Also at council table is Kristen Mayer, who's been involved in the briefing on this matter. I want to address specifically the basis of the award of future, since that's all that's at issue in this appeal. Notably, what's not at issue is the fact that Prestige has been adjudicated to owe us full reimbursement. Actually, it's defense and indemnity. But full reimbursement of defense costs and indemnity dollars spent on this claim, but they want to complain that we didn't adequately prove up futures. The futures were based upon Vernon Bennett's reserve estimates. Mr. Bennett is a work comp adjuster with 25 plus years experience, and he didn't just make those estimates in a vacuum. He relied upon expert opinion testimony and medical records. The testimony of Dr. Ashberger was admitted into evidence and formed a basis for his opinion, as well as the entirety of Ms. Cleveland's medical file. In addition, the work comp attorney for Target, Mr. Pollard, an attorney with 15 years defending comp claims, testified that this was a classic example of a case that was headed towards a perm total disability hearing. And so when Mr. Bennett is required by Colorado law to set a reserve, his reserve has to be adequate to address indemnity, which is the value of the claimant's future wage benefit, medical, which she's entitled to for life, for any medical treatment arising out of this industrial incident, and expense. There's an expense category in his reserve that deals with the attorney's fees, the cost of administration of the claim, etc. With respect to indemnity, which is what Mr. Lebsack spoke about last, Dr. Ashberger testified that this lady was not going to be able to go back to doing what she was doing before. She's 72 years old now. She was stocking shelves for Target, bending, squatting, lifting. He said, after she reaches MMI, she's not going to be able to lift over 10 pounds. She's not going to be able to be on her feet more than 2 hours a day. If she can work, she's going to have a sedentary job, and she's going to have to find an employer who can and will hire her for that type of job. So based upon her physical condition, her medical treatment, her age, her training, it is highly improbable that she would find alternative employment. And so Mr. Bennett accordingly reserved his file so that Target can pay for permanent total disability for this claimant. Target's self-insured. They're required to meet that requirement. And Mr. Bennett explained in very thorough detail why it's important not to under-reserve a file. The state checks that stuff. You get penalized if you have not set aside adequate reserves. But at the same time, we're, yes, sir.
And where the argument goes.
Okay.
Future.
Okay.
Was there medical evidence to support future? Not necessary.
Thank you. I believe the answer to your first question is yes, because Dr. Ashberger testified, and all of the medical records that were introduced into evidence show she was scheduled for two subsequent surgeries, the shoulder, left shoulder, right knee, which would be her third total knee replacement. Dr. Ashberger also testified that at the time of trial, she was suffering from right shoulder problems. They were being treated conservatively. That was ongoing. That problem may in the future require surgery. And aside from the surgeries, you have related physical therapy. Dr. Ashberger testified that for each of the two that she was already scheduled for, she was going to need 4 to 6 months of recuperation time before she could possibly reach MMI. And so the adjuster took all of that into account in setting his reserve for future medicals. Now, admittedly, he based those futures in large part on what had been paid before. And is that a perfect system? Probably not. But according to Mr. Bennett, it is an acceptable system for reserving future medicals under Colorado law, where he is required to do that as a trained work comp adjuster, and Target gets penalized if there is an under reservation for that claim. And where this lady, the mortality table says she's going to live another 14.2 years. If she lives to be 90, we would have under reserved that exposure, but we would buy that because that is the best evidence we had on which to base the cost of future medicals. And so it's not true to say that these costs are unsupported by the medical evidence or made up out of whole cloth. They're determined by an adjuster with 25 years experience handling these claims, using the best information available to him on what the future cost of procedures will be. And I think it's unfair to suggest that Dr. Ashburger could have and should have testified to the cost of future treatment. The fact that he's qualified to render the medical treatment does not make him an expert on the cost. Matter of fact, I would be surprised if he could competently testify to the cost of procedures, especially in this day and age where we know that bills are written up to be written down, but that's sort of another story. The fact is, he laid the foundation for the need for future meds, and under Minnesota law, which I believe governs the substantive issue of the adequacy of our proof of damages, I don't believe expert testimony is necessary to quantify what that cost is. Nonetheless, we had it. We had it in the form of Mr. Bennett. And the case I'm referring to is the Carpenter case, Your Honor, which is cited in our brief. And clearly, a reading of that case does not require expert testimony of future meds in all cases. The last category, well, and before I leave that, let me point out that Mr. Bennett did not just extrapolate for every category of medical expense that went into the medical reserve. Hospitalization, for instance, there's a total of 62,000, I believe, in his reserve analysis, which is Exhibit 13 for the cost of hospitalization. That was past and future. She had already had two surgeries. She was going to have two more. She may have yet a third on her right shoulder if that problem doesn't resolve. If anything, that cost is probably under-reserved. But he used his best estimate as to what an additional reasonable amount for hospitalization would be, hoping that there would only be two additional hospitalization stays. He didn't extrapolate that out through the end of her life. He's assuming she's not going to be going back to the hospital repeatedly. He did, however, assume that she's going to need follow-up care and treatment in the form of yearly checkups, visits, perhaps follow-up care for physical therapy, things of that nature, given her age, given her general health condition, and given the nature and severity of her injuries sustained as a result of this incident. And so our position is that is the basis of Target's futures. Target is on the hook for those damages. Target has to rely upon this experienced claims adjuster to adequately reserve those damages, and Target should not be penalized for the fact that the futures are certain to occur in fact, but uncertain in terms of the amount, where we have a reasonable basis for calculating what that amount might be. The judgment should be affirmed, and I believe that basis is in the record. Last thing I'll mention is on the expense category. Again, Prestige takes issue with the estimate of future expenses. It's about a $26,000 line item. But the reality is Cleveland's comp claim is ongoing. And Prestige, despite the fact that they got a tender of this claim in May 2008 and now have been adjudged to owe defense and indemnity of the claim, they have never stepped up to the plate and agreed to appoint defense counsel to represent Target in this ongoing comp claim. They have never reimbursed one penny owed for even past expenses that have been incurred. And so Target has to do that. It does so through retention of Mr. Pollard. And when and if this case gets to a prompt total disability hearing, which is where he believes it's headed and Mr. Bennett believes it's headed, Target is going to defend against that. But the likely outcome of that proceeding is that they will lose, and she will be entitled to those prime total disability benefits. All of that costs money. Another component of that expense category is administration of the claim. The ongoing medical bills, Mr. Bennett testified, those are reviewed to be sure that the charges that are passed on to Target comply with Colorado law. And all of that costs money, and that money has to be, it has to be paid out of some fund, so it is reserved on this file, and that is the reason for the future reserve for that line item. So we have indemnity, medical, and expense. We had Exhibits 12 and 13 admitted into evidence without objection that set forth what those numbers were, and then we had Mr. Bennett explain, as a qualified expert, the basis for his opinions and the foundation for his opinions, which included the medical records, Dr. Ashberger's testimony, and also Mr. Pollard's testimony. And so Target would ask that the judgment be affirmed in full. However, I want to note that we requested continuance of the trial because Cleveland's case is a bit unusual, okay? She injured herself back in 08. It's 2012. She's still treating. She has yet to have her third knee surgery. And so we could not liquidate our damages in advance of trial. And recognizing that, we asked the trial judge for a continuance, which he denied. The purpose of the continuance would have been to allow Cleveland's case to run its course such that there would be no uncertainty as to futures. We would close out the claim. We would know what the damages were. There would be no reason for anyone to dispute that those charges were, in fact, incurred by Target as a response to this claim.
Cross appeal?
I do not. We did not file a cross appeal. And so, but nonetheless, though, if the court is not satisfied that the future damage award is adequate, I believe it would be prudent to remand for purposes of allowing us to actually put on liquidated damages amounts when and if Cleveland's claim ends, and it will end eventually, but we can't anticipate when. And according to Dr. Ashberger, her treatment as a result of her knee surgery was going to continue through at least 2013, and thereafter she was going to need periodic checkups and additional treatment. So it's just a claim that has unfortunately drug out for a long time, but Target shouldn't be penalized for things it can't control, such as the complexity and the nature of her claim, where Prestige clearly owes reimbursement for everything Target is going to have to pay to resolve this claim.
Let me ask you a question about Exhibit 13, I believe it is, and you referred to that.
Yes,
a portion of that exhibit with regard to attorney's fees being included within an expense item.
Yes, sir.
And I'm going to ask you about opposing counsel's claim in its opening brief, where they're talking about an $1,859.30 per month figure. Attorney's fees.
That's incorrect.
Okay, that's what I wanted to confirm. It appears to me that that $1,859.30, which amounts to $26,402 over the 14.2 years, I guess, is for the medical management fees. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. And that's Exhibit 13, and particularly page 2, which is page 1054 of the record, where you're referring to, I believe, and it's there are three line items within that category: legal, medical management, and other. And the medical management expenses were for ongoing administrative costs, review of medical bills, things of that nature. They don't have anything to do with legal expenses for 14.2 years into the future.
That $26,000 is medical estimated medical management fees.
Well, no, the 26 is inclusive of both legal expenses and the future medical management fees. But when opposing counsel said that that was based upon an 1859 calculation extrapolated over 14.2 years, it was inaccurate to say that all of that related to legal, because in fact that 1859, none of that particular sum relates to legal per se. That particular sum is medical management. Are you following me on that?
I think so.
Okay.
I think
any,
so.
Any further questions, John?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me just hit a couple of points on the last point that was discussed about 1859. The reason that I even raised that was, but I looked through what Mr. Bennett testified about to try to pull out what he testified about as future damages.
And I did not include in our challenge anything that could not be definitely attributed to an estimate of future damages. So if you look at his expense category, you can't parse his testimony and say past, future, with one exception, which is this 1859. That is necessarily a future amount. So that's why I picked that out to discuss. And I admit what it is, it's expense of handling the workers' comp claim. What Mr. Bennett testified about is that it's the cost to review the medical bills to make sure they meet the criteria. In a nutshell, looking big picture now, testimony about insurance reserves is not the same thing as establishing the requirements for recoverable damages. I admit that Mr. Bennett gave a rationale of why he calculated insurance reserves, but that does not meet the requirements to prove damages.
The question, I see you're out of time, but did Prestige oppose the request to continue the case?
I was not trial counsel. I don't think we objected. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank counsel for your helpful arguments. And this matter will stand submitted to the court, and an opinion will issue in due course.